Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Thank you, Adam. So nice of you to say. And if you're looking for an impersonator, then I'm your man. But not Tuesdays. Tuesdays? Yeah, Tuesdays. I like to go fishing at the local pond. You find all sorts of stuff. Just come in, sweetheart.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Triangle of Sadness. This is a 2022 film directed by Ruben Östlund and stars Harris Dickinson, Charles B. Dean and Woody Harrelson. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A fashion model celebrity couple join an eventful cruise for the super rich. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Luxury comes at a price. That don't mean you can't be nice. You work so hard to get where you are. You travel well and you travel far.
Even the rich can drown in shit. Even the rich can drown in
shit. That's what you get when you've got no soul. What is left when greed takes its toll? Wealth doesn't matter when you're stranded on a beach. When your money and your status is out of reach.
Even the rich can drown in shit. Even the rich can drown in
shit. We all shit and we all die. Whether you're rich or can hardly get by. Be gracious, be kind and be cool. Without common sense, you're just another fool.
Even the rich can drown in shit. Even the rich can drown in shit.
Shit.
Even the rich can. Even the rich can.
Shit.
Even the rich can.
Drown in shit. Shit.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Charles B. Dean unexpectedly died shortly after the film's release from sepsis, which was caused by the bacteria called capnocytophaga. This was complicated by the fact that she had lost her spleen several years before in a car accident. She was just 32.
Fucking hell, man. You could start with a bit of a more positive note.
Yeah, I thought I should, but then I thought, you know what? Fuck it. The world's bleak, so I'm going to go in bleak, get the bleak fact out of the way.
I suppose that's a good idea. At least now we build up from minus 100 on the depression scale and get us back on the plus.
Yeah, exactly. Start with a sour note and then end hopefully on a sweeter note.
It is tragic.
It is.
I couldn't believe it when I read it because she's so young. I was watching her in this movie and sometimes it's very easy to see beauty before talent. And it was just, and then she started to act and I thought there was more layers to her as an actor. And I thought, whoa, she's really cool.
Yeah.
And because I saw the little scar on her stomach in the film. I thought, I wonder what that is. I thought maybe, I don't know. Had a baby or something, but that wouldn't be vertical, that'd be horizontal, yeah. Wouldn't it? And below the belly button. But yeah, to read that it just happened so quick before the film got released.
Yeah.
Didn't even get to see the start of what could have been a wonderful career. It's tragic.
Exactly that. And like you, I hadn't seen Charles B. Dean in anything before. And as soon as she was on the screen, she's got that commanding presence, full of energy, full of charisma. And I thought she was like, yeah, she was really good in this film.
Powerful, then,
yeah,
devious.
Reading that, I was just a bit, yeah, just devastated. But I thought it felt right to include it. Second fact, whenever the plot is about to take a turn, there is an irritating sound. A squeaking windshield wiper, a buzzing fly, and a crying baby can all be heard just before the shit hits the fan.
I heard them. Yeah. I didn't realise it was to signify a change in setting or the plot. That's interesting, because I have that noise phobia shizzles.
Yeah.
I don't like it. We've spoke about it a million times. We don't like noisy eaters. Yeah. Don't like people breathing too heavy like I do on this cast. But yeah, that's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like this.
As someone who's triggered by irritating sounds, I picked up on it straight away.
Mm.
And I thought it was to just add to the annoyance, just to increase anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very clever like plot device that now you know that fact. If you watch it again, you see it coming a mile off and you can hear it, and it gets louder and more irritating before there's a huge plot twist or before, as I say, shit hits the fan. It's a really clever way to sort of alert the audience, like, here it comes.
Is it only ever there when Harris Dickinson is in shock? Because I know he was there for the fly.
Mm.
When the fly's buzzing around because his girlfriend's looking at that big, burly, French, hairy mama daddy thing.
Yeah.
And then the baby's crying when he's at the dinner table and everyone's about to chunder.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's the...
I guess the
person it evolves around or revolves around.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point. I think those two characters are sort of the leads in the film, really.
Yes.
If you had to pick a lead or two leads, I'd say it was that young influencer model couple.
Certainly for first and second act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that they're on the screen probably most of the time within the film. So I'd say, yeah, Harris Dickinson's involved whenever shit's about to go sour. Yeah, definitely.
Chapter one's called Yaya and Cole.
Mm.
Chapter two's the yacht.
Yeah.
And chapter three is the island. The island's where you could say it's more of an ensemble thing, isn't it?
Yes, definitely, yeah. Mm. But I just thought that's a really clever way to make a film, because sometimes you can see a twist coming a mile off. The best twist is when you have no idea.
Mm.
But this film lives in some sort of no man's land between the two, where it kind of warns you that it's coming. But I don't know about you, I can never call where this film's going to go. And that's one of the biggest strengths for me.
I think the transition between the yacht and the island was the more, like, I was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
And I did sort of sit back a bit and think, oh no, is it going to go? Like, I had my doubts.
Mm.
I thought this has just gone, this was at like 6 on an amp and now it's gone to 11.
Yeah.
But I adapted quite quickly into the 11.
Yeah.
Didn't take me long.
Mm. Final fact, according to the actors, Ruben Östlund would frequently subject them to over 20 takes for each shot. In interviews, Harris Dickinson admitted that he loved this style of filmmaking as it made him feel as if he was being used to the full extent instead of spending a lot of his time hanging around on set.
Mm-hmm.
If you was an actor, would you prefer the Clint Eastwood style of one and done? If you're good enough, you should be able to do it in one, let's move on. Or would you rather be like Ruben Östlund or like David Fincher, who's well renowned of doing hundreds of takes to get it just right?
Well, I look at it like warming up for a sport or exercise. The better warm up you do, the better your performance will be, and you might capture the gold.
Mm.
So if you don't warm up and you just rely on your talent, quotation fingers,
yeah,
mm-hmm. If you just rely on that, you might sprain an ankle or something.
Yeah.
So I think I always liked what I heard about Ian Holm. I think Ian McKellen said he'd never worked with an actor who every single take would do it differently, because he was flexing different ways of doing the lines and approaching it. And I think Kellen would just do it the same every time.
Yeah. And I think if you're a director, I think variety is your friend. So if you've got an actor who's willing to do, like Harris Dickinson was, like 20 odd takes of the same scene, when it comes to editing and making the final decisions in the film, if you've got 20 different things to look at, you can eliminate 5 straight away. You can whittle it down to the last 5 and then choose the one that you think fits best.
It's better to have it and not need it.
Exactly. Been that to yeah. need it, not I, have it, yeah. I tend to agree, yeah. And I think if I was an actor, I could never do it, obviously, but if I was, I think I would warm to that style of filmmaking.
Well, imagine there was a huge mistake and you had to go back and do a reshoot, but Charlie Dean had died.
Yeah.
You got CGI her in like they did in Sopranos.
That's a decent fact, actually. That's a good point, sorry, because, yeah, that alone validates the reason to do it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, because you never know the sorrow that's going off screen.
You can't get that team back together. You'll never see this team back together. It's too, no. They scarred from this. I scarred.
Yeah. It is a scarring but deeply enjoyable film, isn't it? What did you like about Triangle of Sadness?
Misa got a lot of time for darkly humorous swipe at the borderly rich and deluded.
Sorry, did you just Jar Jar Binks?
I did.
In there? Did you just throw in a Misa?
I think it's been a long time since people heard the Jar Jar Binking.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do it.
Bring
yeah.
it back. Bring back the Binks.
Misa Gotsa. Just throw some Zeds on some things.
Yeah, yeah.
We already do a form of broken English, me and you, anyway.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. I love that it's
highlighting some of the biggest problems that we face today, and problems that cannot be solved due to overpopulation. You're only ever going to have that 1% of being rich will only ever get smaller and smaller whilst the population of poor gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yep.
And I was watching it, and I've been reading a book recently called Plagues and Peoples, William H. McNeill. The relation I could see in it. So you ever heard of macro parasitism?
No.
Is the exploitation of larger animals or the animals of your own race or your own species. And that's what it speaks to in this. So a micro parasite is COVID, is virus.
Yeah.
It feeds off of you, your energy, you feed it.
Yeah.
But if it kills you, it kills the host, it kills itself.
Yeah.
So you have to be a good balance.
Yes.
So a macro parasite, unlike a micro one, it's like a tiger eats you for fuel.
Yeah.
That's slowly obviously gone away with how man's evolved with guns and stuff, and we've managed to kill the biggest animals in the world. So what we do is we feed on each other now,
yeah,
as macro parasites. And what that can be, bishops, lords, millionaires, it's a plutocracy, which means it's you're ruled by the wealthy.
Yes.
And there's this weird pretend world where we think we're a democracy.
It's that, isn't it? They are in control of what they deem to be lesser, but without the lesser, then they can't operate.
No,
well, they need the peasants, so to speak, the rich and the wealthy and the powerful. They need those people who have to look up to them, who are dear to be like them, to be able to survive, to be able to function.
Yeah. So other humanity is the burden of the farmer or the labourer, you know, and the way they feed on them. And if that's the thing, just like in microparasites, if the plutocracy takes more from these people than they can give, they kill themselves and the host, etc. And it's amazing when you see how dangerous it can get, because it's only getting worse. That divide's getting worse and worse and worse. Like I've said it before, I say it again, Rishi Sunak and his wife are one of the richest couples in England, and he governs the country,
and his experience is not the common average Joe's experience.
No.
So how can he pull from a resource, a well of shared experience, when his experience and existence is so different to, say, you and I and 98% of everyone else?
Yeah, we can't all be rich. It's impossible. But we don't all have to be poor. We don't, or people don't have to starve. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you see it so much in this. Like, it starts with so much affluence and wasted affluence.
Yeah.
Like, it's not necessary to have a yacht. It's not necessary to have two phones or a Rolex or a $28,000 engagement ring. And you're getting all of this stuff through the backbreaking work and sacrifice of lower people, lower class.
Yeah.
Everyone's a usurper that becomes rich in some form or another.
Well, of course,
they took over a throne. They had more men on their side one day, and now they're in control.
Yeah.
And you look at the poor sort of Filipino staff that are in the bowels of the ship in this film.
Yeah.
You see it in so many films. You see it in real life, and you see how they're the ones cleaning toilets and wiping up sick from someone who's overindulged on seafood and champagne. It made me feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think that's its purpose as well. And I think it's really clever within the film. You speak of class and how different the top tier of society is and the lower tiers, and how it gets worse the further removed you get from the rich and wealthy. In the film, and it's sort of shown on the cruise ship itself, on the yacht.
Yeah,
you've got the passengers who are the elite. Then you've got the people serving them that get all the tips, that have to be at their beck and call. And then underneath them, you've got the maintenance guys and the people that clean the toilets. It doesn't mean you're any less of a person if you're doing what's considered a lesser job. And I think the film does a really clever job of flipping that and seeing that value isn't in what you own. It's what you know.
Mm.
Well, that's prevalent later on in the film, isn't it?
Bleeds into my second like. And I love how it shows that history is doomed to repeat itself, and that nature will always will out, and in a really clever way as well, because as we just spoke about, it starts with all the affluence and the unnecessary things that actually aren't useful in a world where, say, you have to survive.
Mm.
And by the end, it does the reversal, where the lower class person, because of needs must, knew how to start a fire, knew how to catch a fish, and all of a sudden she holds the commodity that makes her valuable.
Yeah.
She's the one who has the power, and she's the one who can feed her. So then a new currency gets introduced. Sex.
Yeah.
Becomes really carnal.
Yeah.
You know, she's sitting there, she's feeding this group of islanders who have been shipwrecked. Yes, to fill in, if you haven't seen the film.
Yeah.
Their yacht gets attacked by pirates. Mm. It gets blown up, sunk. A lot of them die. They don't even show you their deaths. Yeah. You just imagine half the cast gone in a heartbeat, and then you're dealing with the new islanders. And one of the toilet cleaners is Southeast Asian somewhere.
Yeah.
She's Filipino, Malaysian, something. excellent actor. What was her name?
Dolly D. Leon.
Do you mind?
Sorry, Dolly... you asked me what her name was.
Yeah, but you took ages. Dolly D. Leon, yeah. She played a great role. She executed brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that role reversal. Seeing her hold the power and watching them be almost confused by it, like, oh, why is this happening? It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You've been doing this, but you've had different apparatus, different tools to do the same thing she's doing.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and so what? She wanted to get fingered. Who cares?
Yeah, if you're in a position of power in everyday life, she couldn't be the one that's barking orders and give demands.
She's not forcing him.
No.
She's just saying, look, come over here. I got a tasty little crispy snack.
Yeah.
You can have it.
Yeah.
If you punch my box. And
yeah, lovingly punch my box, yeah.
And even his girlfriend says, yeah, do it, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing because that's how it all starts. And just to finish off that point, I love, yeah, that whole how we're doomed to repeat ourselves. So the guys who are very, very, yes, yes, ma'am, yes, yes, you're the captain to De Leon, they, after a bit of time, they start to think for themselves like any primate would have done eventually. You know, they start to think, what happened if I do that?
Yeah.
And then they see this donkey, they keep hearing it for months that they're on the island. And then the men decide, should we try it? Should we try kill it?
Yeah.
And then they do. And then what you see is caveman. Once they kill it, which is a brutal killing, by the way, hilariously executed.
Mm.
I appreciated it. It was brilliant. But then they do this like raging scream like cavemen.
Yeah,
like, or like footballers just scored a goal because yeah. It's like, it's in my nature.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of years ago, that's in my DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
To kill things, to eat them, to take their fuel, to be parasitic.
Yeah.
To feed off of them.
Mm.
Macro parasitism. It's the T's and the S's, mate.
Yeah, they're too close together.
Macro parasitism.
That sounds right.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Macro parasitism.
Nailed it. Yeah, that's a great point, and I fully agree with all of that. Yeah.
So many things I was nodding to in this film and go, yeah. Even, and obviously all of the equality things as well. I love a good fight with my partner about equality. It is the best.
Yeah.
I love being the villain all the time. 35-year-old white overweight fat boy. Love it. I love being told I'm a bigot.
Yeah.
Because I like poon.
Yeah. you feel good for that?
Yeah.
Get it all out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to agree with everything you said. And I think that the film... it perfectly balances that having something to say with comedy. And when comedy's got a deeper message, I think that's a winning formula.
That is,
when it can
that
do
is
both.
Summary 101, it's perfect.
Exactly that. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You got any more likes for me?
The whole cast, excellent.
Mm.
All so different. All brought something tasty to the pot. There's only two I didn't believe. I didn't believe in their characters or story as much. They were a bit too gimmicky for me. And that was the British older couple who manufactured hand grenades. No one else on that boat was unrealistic. A Russian millionaire who dealt in farmland and shit. And he says that, oh, you know, I made my millions in shit. You know, there's some aristocracy sort of characters on their models. And they're all believable.
Yeah, the Scandi app developer. Yeah.
I think the little subtext of... we're the British Empire. Them two, that's what they represented. There's no way Clementine, around about 90 or 85, there's no way she was like a businesswoman in the fucking 50s making hand grenades.
Yeah.
It was just like, no.
It did fit. Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you again that those elements, those two characters felt a little bit crowbarred in.
Mm.
And their only point, to, as far as I can tell, to be in the film was a gag that they get
to blow
blown
up
by their own
grenade.
By their own product, yeah.
Which is fine. But when that whole cast have got me on the edge of my seat almost the entire film, it's just them two. I was just like, just not you two.
I think if you're looking at the cast and 90%+ of them hit right for you, I think you're right. That should be flagged as a positive.
Yeah, definitely.
Because so many films, the premise could be great, the writing, the dialogue, everything could be amazing, but what ruins it is a performance or a character.
Mm.
So if most of them are something that you enjoyed, that's definitely a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that all you done for your likes?
Yeah, I think it's naturally going to occur, man, as we talk, because there's so many funny things in the film. I highly enjoyed it. I agree with so much that's mentioned in it.
I think a film that's so deep-rooted in subtext, but also just so largely entertaining, it could be a long episode, because there's a lot to take away from this one.
Yeah.
And first thing I liked about it was the Triangle of Sadness is a smart, funny, political and poignant social commentary on wealth, class, 21st century relationships and the ever-evolving obsession with social media. And the whole thing's just a perfect balance of comedy and drama that manages to juggle a chaotic blend of deeper meaning and outright entertainment. Boom. Now, for me... if a film has those ingredients and can make something as delicious as this final product.
Delicious.
It is. It's one of my favourite sort of films.
Yeah,
like, satire, man. I'm sitting there and I'm rolling around in laughter
yeah.
at things that if it was handled any other way, you wouldn't be laughing at. Because
no.
the events of it is just yeah. shocking. But it's handled so well. That, like you said, the cast are brilliant. The performances are brilliant. The script, everything that Oslin does, all the decisions he makes, it all just works.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, because there's so much to it. And like you, a lot of it resonates that afterwards I was thinking about this film hours and hours after it finished
yeah.
and it's just one of those films that really sticks with you.
What gets me hard is the fact that he's a writer and a director.
Yeah.
And I sit there and I think this guy's sense of humour is all me. I want.
Yeah.
I want to know him. Mm. The fact that he's pissing himself editing this, I reckon.
Yeah.
Just laughing his head off. That I talk about again, that donkey kill is excellent. So Jarmo, who's this brilliant character in it, he's kind of Scandinavian, I believe,
yeah.
but he hits that donkey in the head once with a rock and he's like, yeah! And then it goes, argh! And they're like, oh God, it's still alive. And then yeah. everyone starts to turn away and even he walks away like a toddler that's just knocked over his little brother and he's like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what to do. Yeah. And then he has to brutalize it about 20 times. Mm. And this Oslin guy, his sense of humor is me. It cuts. And they're consoling the bald guy against the tree. And he's yeah. he's in literally 1,000 yards yeah. there, post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, he went from hero to victim in the like in the flick of an eye. And it's just so yeah. funny. And that's prevalent throughout the film, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's yeah. just masterful, everything about it. Yeah,
very funny.
I think the other thing I liked about it as well, we've touched on it already, but it was just how honest the whole mm. thing was. I found the film to be a true depiction of how ridiculous high society is. And the ignorance of the privileged is shown in its true ugly form. And I love how the film sort of shows that money means nothing when you're managing your own mortality. Mm. And it's that, like, we are going to keep hitting that point of how funny it can be, but how sort of deep and profound it is at the same time. And I thought the way the film showed us that true power is held in how you react to proper peril, that I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
And the film should just remind us all that common sense and survival instincts are far more important than the things you own and the false following you have amassed.
Oh, mate, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Very nicely done.
It's. I watched it twice, as I say, every episode, like I always do, but I watched it a day after.
Yeah, close yeah, together.
So, yeah, first viewing, next day, second viewing. And I thought, oh, I don't know, is this too close? I'd yeah. say I enjoyed it more the second time around. Like, it's just so good when you know what's coming, when you're listening out for those irritating sounds and you know when it's going to turn and what pivots it's going to take and all of mm. that. It just, yeah. The whole thing just works.
I'm sort of torn with the whole, so the privilege things. So Zlatko Buric character, Dmitry in it, he's this hilarious Russian sort of oligarch and he's a millionaire, a billionaire probably, but he knows what he is.
He doesn't hide away from it.
He knows he overindulges. He doesn't really care. He's destructive. He wants shit to go wrong. Like him and Woody Harrelson go on, I'm so jealous, they go on the most
bender.
Incredible piss up together mm. where they literally take the boat hostage so they can do a podcast to them. I was dying.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
And then they go yeah. on this incredible back and forth talking about, you know, referencing Mark Twain and stuff and John F. Kennedy, and there's some incredible sayings in it. And then that bleeds into them getting drunk and having this really deep conversation about how one's a terrible socialist and the other one's like a successful capitalist or something.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting and it's just an excellent piss up. But yeah, that's Zlatko Buric. He is a character in it who is rich, but I don't think he was born to privilege.
No.
I don't think he just inherited privilege and then, you know, stands up in front of a parliament and says, yeah, we're cutting benefits. No.
Yeah.
He's made his fortune. I respect that.
Self-made man, right?
He's a self-made man. I respect it. But obviously in his mind still, when they reach the island, he's one of the survivors, by the way, from the yacht sinking. His mind is still, oh, I'm a rich man. Once we get off his island, I'll give you money. He's
yeah.
still looking for a way to benefit
exactly,
from
yeah.
his fortune
yeah,
rather
yeah.
than partaking, trying to help.
Yeah.
But I like him for that. And every character is flawed in this film.
Yes.
Even when you think Harris Dickinson's, is that his name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Harris Dickinson's character, even when you think, oh, he's the moral compass in this film. And then when they get on the island, he steals food and he lies about stealing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you learn, like, everyone's got their flaws. Not yeah. one person in it doesn't have their flaws. which I think is honest.
And he's a good-looking young lad. He's a model within the film. And in times of peril and struggle, he's willing to sell his penis for pretzels.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's brilliant. Like, oh, you're Dad. Right, that everyone's humbled once you're shipwrecked. It don't matter what you've got outside of being shipwrecked.
Everyone is humbled once you're shipwrecked.
Well, it's true. It don't matter who you are. It doesn't matter. You can have all the money in the world, or you can be a survivalist. I know who I want to be stuck on an island with.
Who?
The survivalist.
So you can be parasitic and feed off them?
Well, I couldn't survive on my own. But if I'm stranded on an island with someone who's an absolute billionaire but does nothing for themselves, we ain't going to survive.
I just had the funniest thought. I just imagined I'm on a little sailing ship and I'm approaching this island. That's not very... No one lives on that island. And all I see is you, this little soy boy, on the beach starting to pull down his trousers and offer his arse to anyone to come rescue him. You're just going, are you here, puppy? Over here.
Papacita pretzel for me.
Oh!
Change my accent. Sexuality, everything for a pretzel.
I would be white ass.
Yeah.
Oh, Dad.
I would be Harris Dickinson for sure. Like, if it's be a slut or die, a slut to survive, I'm slutting.
Didn't you think that he started to enjoy it?
Yeah, I think...
Tickling her back, like, hold my pocket, please, prison break.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, his relationship with his model girlfriend was superficial. Mm. Like, they were both good-looking, and it was
an Instagram business.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were famous models, they could coexist on social media as a platform, and everyone be like, oh, look at these guys' lives together. Oh, they're the perfect couple and that. On a deeper level, they didn't really connect. They're just beautiful young people.
Yeah.
Whereas this connection with the woman that could, like, shelter him, feed him, and in return, he's just got to tickle some pink, then I think, like, he's going to grow to love that person because she's the provider.
Mm.
And I think I'd be exactly the same, so no judgment here. Final like, and again, it's one of those films I could go on for days and get really deep about it. I just loved how it's a film of two halves. The first half showcases the arrogance and entitlement of the wealthy that look down their nose at those serving them. And then the second half just shows that money can't protect you from everything. And the film, you find yourself in a position of realizing suddenly those with no money but loads of real life experience are in control, and those that have accumulated a wealth of no true meaning are shown to be the weak.
Yep.
And the way the film pivots into just absolute chaos is masterful. And as I said earlier, it took a turn that I was not expecting. And at the end of the day, we all shit, we all die. Worth isn't and shouldn't be dictated by wealth. I've got a lot to say.
It is one of the greatest throwing up scenes I've ever seen in cinema. And they're hard to watch, but when you see disgusting, horrible people suffer, it kind of gets me going, you know. I was really into it. I was like, yeah.
And soundtrack to like heavy metal when they're shitting and throwing up, they're in no longer in control. Like their bowel movements are in control of them. They're shitting, throwing up everywhere, and then heavy metal hits and then the toilets are vomiting up and it's just mad. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, that's what you fucking get.
Yeah,
what you get.
Adam sent me a voice note and all I heard was, yeah, that's what you get.
Yeah. And then it showed the people that are deemed lesser, they're not ill because they've not eaten the a la carte.
No, they've got sea legs.
Yeah, they've got sea legs, all of that.
They work.
The music kicks in the heavy metal, and the people that actually matter that are cleaning the ship, getting stuff back to order.
Yeah.
They're the important ones, not the people that are bum chundering hundreds of dollars worth of elegant food. I loved it.
How excellent is that shot with Dimitri's wife, played by Sunny Melez. Yeah, is sliding back and forth in the toilet.
Mm.
It's just so well done.
Yeah.
Like, she's just sliding in piss and shit, and it keeps taking her to the toilet so she can chunder, and then it takes her back away. Yeah. It's so clever.
And it's amazing in that instant she tries to keep her grace about her.
Yeah.
Like, even in a moment where you're naked, you're sweating out, you're shitting, you're throwing up, even then she's like, oh, I have to get it in the toilet. I'd be lying on my back just letting what needs to come out of me come out of me. The damage is done. I wouldn't be aiming for a toilet, I'd be just lying there going, this is it.
Oh.
This is my fate now.
Oh, like, shit.
It's up to the gods.
I've decided I'm not going to pull that sailboat into anchor and come help you.
No, you shouldn't, mate. Let me suffer there on my own. Anything you didn't like about the film?
I'll say some quotes from a couple of films. You tell me what you think I don't like about it, okay, Raby? All right, ready, Bay?
Raby?
Rabies.
Okay.
No, here we go. What if this is as good as it gets? Or, I'm telling you, these drug dealers represent a clear and present danger to the United States. What do you think my dislike is?
I don't know.
They mention the name of the film in the film.
Okay.
I can't abide by it. I hate that shit.
Do you know there's a community of cinema goers that this is a real thing, it's going to sound ridiculous.
Please.
Google it. There's a group of cinema goers that go to a film, and if the name of the title is said in the film, they stand up, they applaud, and they leave.
No.
Yeah, no. It's a real thing. It is a real thing.
Do they not find out in advance? Or do they go to any of film?
I think it's like an unspoken cult type thing that they sign up to. No membership fees apply. And then if the name of the title is announced, they clap and they leave.
Thing is, though, there's different degrees of naming a title. So let's say you're watching U571. There could be a radio call from U467 and go, U571, U571. That's not saying the name of the film.
Yeah.
But saying, what if this is as good as it gets? Or yeah. saying, can you relax your triangle yeah. sadness? For me, it is a form of breaking the fourth wall. You're talking to your audience.
Yeah.
And I've never liked it, man.
I tell you what I like.
What do you like?
I like niche negatives. And that is a niche negative.
Yeah, but it is, you know me, I don't like it when directors put themselves in their own film. Yeah. Either. So don't like you naming your film in your film, don't like director. I want to escape my life. I don't want to be reminded I am actually sitting here watching a film. I want to pretend I'm Woody Harrelson getting fucked up in a cabin.
You don't need to be reminded that you're currently sitting in a triangle of sadness while watching a film to escape said triangle, right?
Well, who knows, man? Maybe that is as good as it gets.
Okay. A lot of deep turns in this one, eh?
Sharp.
Any more dislikes?
Yeah. I already covered it. The two unbelievable characters, really. The British couple that manufacture hand grenades, Winston and Clementine. They didn't fit the crowd for me. They were a bit hokey. I think they were a subtext for British imperialism.
Yeah.
Not realising the gravity of the situation or the means unto which you acquired your fortunes.
Yeah, they were sort of lazy stereotypes sandwiched in, right?
And I just hated how accurate the film was at how backwards our species has become and how doomed we are. Mm. Because the whole time that population keeps growing, the divide gets further and further apart, and we have to become state-dependent citizens.
Yeah.
They'll never solve it. They're even teaching you now to come to the terms of the fact you will be poorer.
Yeah.
And the harder you work, the less you're going to get.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, what are you going to do? If I was a millionaire tomorrow, I wouldn't help anyone. I'd just join in with these lot, the ones who I hate at the moment. I'd just become them.
You help me?
I'd help you. That's different, though.
I needed that reassurance.
That's different, though.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's true. And I'll jump on that bandwagon because I felt exactly the same. And to be frank, the film, I loved it. Loved this film. Brilliant. Yes. I think everyone should watch it. Saying that, it made me furious.
Yes.
I got mad at the following. The fashion industry, unequal relationships, the illusion of happiness, social media obsession, the arrogance of the rich, and basically at the world we have become. Society has grown weak, continues to get more shallow, and we as a species are far more interested in appearing happy to faceless numbers on our phones than focusing on the things that really fucking matter.
Yes.
I'm getting worked up trying to say this point.
I feel furious.
We should all watch Triangle of Sadness and be fucking humbled by it.
I know some that's going to sound so classist, but conservative, middle-classy type people that would watch this and be like, oh, it's silly. It's silly.
Yeah, because they are so ignorant, they don't see that they're the problem.
Oisk.
Oisk.
Yep.
Talking of oisk, another dislike, oyster slurping, violent vomiting, and bum chundering. Whilst this represents a vital turning point in the film, it was not a pleasant experience.
It was exceptional.
Oh, hilarious. Second time watching is a lot more easier to stomach.
They were forced to listen to an unplanned podcast while sitting in their own shit and thinking the ship is going under. And it's the sadness in some of their faces. They're just exhausted. And I'm sitting there going,
that's what
y'all get.
Exactly that. And imagine that. Like you're sitting there realizing, okay, I am just a mortal being. I've got all the wealth in the world, but I can shit and throw up and lose all my credibility. Wealth means nothing when you're shitting through the eye of a needle.
Well, their lungs can fill with water too, innit?
Exactly that. And imagine going through that turmoil and a voice on a speaker going, you're shit. You are shit. You don't pay your taxes. You think you're better than everyone else. Your wealth has clouded your judgment. You're a piece of shit and now you're going to fucking die. That's what you get.
Shit, I forgot about this. You know when it starts to happen, everyone's throwing up, but Woody and Dimitri stay having a drink.
Mm.
Someone like looks out there, sort of cabin hole, and it sounds like a gunshot. I thought Dimitri killed Woody Harrelson, and then he picks up the mic and goes, the ship is going under. And then you see Woody Harrelson stumbling down the hallway of whiskey, trying to get in the door. And I honestly thought, oh, fuck, he's killed him. But no, it was the film was better than what I thought was happening, what had happened.
Which is a lovely surprise when it does that, yeah. Mm. And I think I've stumbled and bumbled over my words quite a bit, but I feel really passionately about this film. It's really weird because reading the synopsis and going into it, I was expecting it to be a decent film. I was thinking, 2.5 hours for a comedy, this sounds a bit much. Mm. I don't know if I'm going to vibe with this as much as other people. And the fact that it plays out, like you said, completely different to how I was expecting. Yeah. Like, it got me really thinking. It got me really judging. It did all of these things. It had me really having emotions that I wasn't expected to have going into a film that I thought was just a broad comedy. And when I was writing up the episode, I found myself getting angry, and it sort of stuck with me for a few days. And I think that's the point. Mm. It's a comedy with purpose, and they're few and far between.
Well, I think with satire, you're always, they are the best films to split a crowd in half. This is why I think this film doesn't get the applause it deserves, because it might be biased for me. Yeah. I might look at it and be like, no, but it isn't, because at the end it shows you a poor person who's become useful because of their survival ability, taking advantage of the fact that they've become useful. So it does a full circle, like I was saying about how nature, history is doomed to repeat itself. Even though, say, me and yourself are not well off.
No, far from it.
And we do despise the affluent or the rich or the government that stop us from ever getting anywhere in life, etc.
Yeah.
Like, oh yes, oh no, you can make your dreams come true. Mm, yeah, okay. You can feel really down about that, but then you see the ugly side of someone coming up from the bottom.
Mm.
And it can turn that way as well. Like, you know, pretty much insinuating, oh, if you have sex with me, I'll feed you. That's the Weinstein syndrome.
Yeah.
It's a form of power, but you can say no.
Yeah, exactly that.
You don't have to say yes.
And when the chips are down,
I don't care if your career's on the line. I don't care if you might get a role if you do it. I don't care if you might get a burger if you do that. If you don't want to do it, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you want to feed your kids.
Yeah.
And you just like, nah, I would rather ruin my own mental health and my own life to save my kids for food.
I think that a film like this, if you are affluent, like you said earlier, you might watch it and go, this is ridiculous. We're not like that. And me and you are speaking and saying how we look down on those above us. There's people out there less fortunate than us. Mm. We're sitting here recording a podcast that we love to do. We're sheltered, we're fed, we're lucky compared to a lot of other people.
Totally.
They would be looking at us like we're looking at the rich and going, look at these guys, they don't know what they're fucking moaning about. And of course that's right.
Totally, yeah.
But I think having the foresight to know the difference and being able to, like, you know, accept that. There's a world of difference between just getting by and keeping a roof over your head, paying the bills, and being able to, on a whim, bet £100,000 at a fucking casino or something like that. And I think the film treads that really well. And in an instant, it all can switch.
Mm.
Like, if the shit hits the fan and you know how to start a fire and fish, you'll be fine on an island. If you're Elon Musk and you don't have any survival skills, guess what? You're going to fucking die.
There is only evidence to the whole plutocracy of it all and how the wealthy do rule almost everything, almost 99% of the world's wealth.
Of course they do, yeah.
But there is no evidence to suggest that you could be a starving, poor African kid with no formal education, no money, no support, and you could become the president of the United States. It has not happened.
Yeah, it's exactly that, yeah.
It's not happened.
Yeah.
Fuck.
We're angry boys today, huh? I've got some questions. Are you interested?
Yeah.
Triangle of Sadness shines a light on how the other half live and explores how we, as a society, have become obsessed with money and showing others that we are living attractive existences. Do you think we will ever get back on track and adjust our narrative to focus on the important things? Or do you think it's just going to get worse?
No, as the population grows, so does the need to be...
relevant?
No, the margins get worse. They don't get better.
Okay.
Too many people and too many restrictions, regulations in place. You can't just go out there. I can't just go out there, dig a well, farm some chickens on some random bit of land and build a house.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed.
No.
I'm not allowed to go and be independent.
Yeah,
you might say I'm free. America have this weird conception that they live in a free society.
Yeah, pay your taxes, but pay the right to work, pay to die.
Yeah, most prisoners per capita, you know, more people on benefits and stuff and welfare and, you know, how did you get there? Well, are you being kept down by a higher being, a bigger force?
Mm.
You know, I don't think it will ever get better.
No.
In fact, I think it's only going to get worse, and it's so depressing to think about, but that's why you just got to rock out them last years.
That's it.
Rock it out.
Keep your head high.
Rock that dog.
Rock out with your cock out.
It's depressing.
Yeah, it is. I'll carry on with that depressive chain.
Well, we started on a low.
Yeah, we'll finish on a low. Money, relationships and meeting expectations are adult things that are hard to navigate. Should schools do more to prepare the youth of today for the pressures of tomorrow?
I mean, it's the sentiment is in the right place if you wanted to do that. I think it's good to do it, but yeah, I don't know, you could magnify that from, say, a teacher telling me when I felt nervous about maths, I wasn't very good at it. A teacher telling me, if you don't do good at maths, you're going to get nowhere in life.
Exactly.
If someone tells me, this is how hard it is going to be for you to get a home, to even rent a house, you could even have quite a good job, you could even finish an education, you're going to really struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sort of get that sort of, well, what's the point in trying? I see it already in a generation.
Yeah.
In 17, 18-year-olds, the lackluster approach to life and work. Because all they hear every day is their mum and dad's talking about, fucking hell, it's so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard.
And on the flip side of that, they only have to look on their phone at Instagram and see these videos of people being like, you know what, I could actually get paid to sit on my ass and play FIFA. Yeah. I could show me that's doing a dance. No, but they are polluted by the thought that, oh,
let's do like, less.
I don't actually have to do anything because I'm good at games, or I can, and you know, a small minority of people can make a living and make a success out of themselves that way. The vast majority of people that try down that route don't get anywhere.
But don't the 1% benefit from having a land of mongrels or a land of like idiots?
I think there's something to be said about that.
It can work both ways. They still need their geniuses to run, you know, defense companies and be engineers and be all of that. But they do benefit when the massive population that are paying tax across low income jobs and stuff, you know, a million people giving you a pound is a lot better than one person giving you £100.
Yeah, of course. Isn't it? Tricky times. Tricky times. Oh. Welcome to our light-hearted podcast.
I can't do this.
Final question. Would you rather have the shits or the six?
Depends, because there's different types of shits.
There is.
I've had some ones that start right up in my chest.
Yeah.
And they're burning. And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. You don't know which way it's coming.
Yeah. I've had some really achy ones that take ages to get out. Mm. And I'm just sick of them. But sometimes I've had some great ones that feel like Exodus.
Yeah.
You know, Nirvana. I've literally just voided hell. And I feel great.
Yeah.
Always shits.
You reckon shits?
But over six. Yeah, God.
But the thing is, I think, when you're sick, when you got the six, when that last sick hits, you're like, oh, I feel so good.
But you don't know when it's the last sick.
Nor do you with the shits.
Yeah, but that weren't my fight for it. I wasn't saying I need to know what the last one will be, because I'll guess what, in a day or two, I'll be having a shit again.
Yeah.
But in a day or two, I shouldn't be having a sick again.
Yes. I mean, imagine that. That's the question.
Point one.
That's the question that lightens the tone of the podcast. Would you rather have diarrhea or vomiting?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you've got bowel cancer.
Ooh. What would you what would you rate Triangle of Sadness out of 10?
I gave it a 9.
Yeah.
I really, it's just, yeah, man, it hit home. I laughed my ass off.
Mm.
Yeah. I almost thought 8, but I do really like it. And I think even maybe 3 months from now, I'd watch it with someone. I'd be like, let's watch this. I think you'll like it. It's funny.
Yeah.
Really funny.
Yeah. I like you. I was flirting between 8 and 9, and I went with a 9 as well.
Oh.
Because I watched it a day after, twice in 2 days, and I just loved it. The second time, it's so much funnier. And that shared experience of watching it with someone that hasn't seen it, it's one of those films where you can get, if you know what the turn is and you know where it's going.
I was
going,
looking forward to that, but it didn't happen for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's great to watch with someone that has no fucking idea what's going to happen. So, yeah, I rate it very highly. Probably my second favourite film of 2022. So I really enjoyed it. I preferred
it a lot more to Everything Everywhere All at Once, which obviously swoops the 95th Academy Awards. I think it was the 95th. And this was nominated for lots and it didn't get any. I think it might have got something, but nothing in the big boy categories, which I thought was a shame, because as best pictures go, I would have picked this over Everything.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Yeah, it's a better film as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That gives Triangle of Sadness a total score of 18 out of 20. If you like your films to be funny, infuriating and full of profound subtext, or if you ever wanted to see the obnoxiously rich get exactly what they fucking deserve, then Triangle of Sadness could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Force Majeure, Parasite and The Menu. Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
So this one's based on a true story.
I like them ones.
And it's a story that really caught my attention, and I could easily see a film of this being made. I think it could be quite funny, but also a little bit of serious subtext to it. But yeah, anyway, I'll start with a quote that I've read about this real event. How do you break through the Iron Curtain? July 25th, 1953, riding the Czech Freedom Tank through the Iron Curtain. So what that is talking to is this family in Czech Republic during, you know, the communist crackdown. So after World War II, they built the Berlin Wall. Winston Churchill coined the term Iron Curtain, and everyone knows about the Berlin Wall. And if you know Bridge of Spies or 13 Days and stuff, these films cover all of that, essentially that communism. Well, even Oppenheimer, you'll get a lot from that. So I'll quote one of the real life people. This is the dad of the family who built a tank to drive through the wall. Took 5 years to plan it. So I'm thinking early part of the film, you see the struggle, the oppression from the Ruskies. Then you see the idea formulate and then him building this tank to escape Czech Republic into Germany, where the Allies are, where the Americans are, the British, etc. So one of his quotes was, "We knew what would happen if we were caught. For Walter and Krasarik, it would be the firing squad. For Marta and me, for Mrs. Cloud, for Joseph, there would be questionings, beatings, and finally hangings. For the two children, life without home or parents. We had two guns. We could shoot our way through if we had to. Vaclav Ulik." So the main guy is called Vaclav Ulik. He has a wife called Marta, I believe, and a kid. And there was a couple of other people in there. Essentially, 8 people got in this tank, but his family was 5.
Okay.
So main guy, Vaclav Ulik. Obviously, names can change places based on a true story, but, you know, that's it. But what I see is this, like I was saying, a film where you see them oppressed by the Ruskies, this a dictatorship no better than what Hitler would have put them under. And he's like, no, I'm going to save my family this time. Because he went to a concentration camp, this guy, as well, during World War II. So okay. His story alone is actually fascinating.
Yeah.
He was in a concentration camp. He survived it. And then he had to deal with the Russians after that. Like, Jesus Christ, give us a break. Anyway, he was using this old German sort of, not an armoured personnel carrier, but it was kind of like a car, armoured car. And he was using it to do forestry work, like get logs for the communists. He had to provide them logs. And them logs were the logs that were building the bloody barriers that were stopping him from ever leaving the country. Mm. So he built that up with the idea that it's armoured. We get in it. We approach the border, lift the wheels up, use the tracks to burst through this line. You know, mines going off and everything. It's like an escape to freedom. It's incredible. I think the story's brilliant. I think you could easily do a film on it.
Yeah,
I love true stories. Yeah. So daddy figure builds a tank and escapes a communist society with his family. And you know what? They actually ended up touring America in the car. Famous, world famous. Ended up on Time magazine, I think. Really cool story.
So they were successful in their...
They made it.
Endeavors.
Yeah, we made
That's
it,
amazing.
Yeah.
And then, so the story sort of focused on that sort of tagline. How do you break through the Iron Curtain?
Yeah.
And it's not a metaphor. They're actually driving through their restriction, the barrier to get to freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not metaphorical, it's physical.
It is literal as well, yeah, because Winston Churchill sort of poetically called it an Iron Curtain, but there was steel, iron and steel barbed wire and dragon's teeth and wooden barriers and mines and stuff. I mean, you see it in Bridge of Spies when they're building that wall. They built a real barrier, like the Great Wall of China, to stop these ideologies mixing, capitalism, communism.
Okay.
So many people were killed trying to get... There's more fascinating stories than that. The other ones similar to that. People swimming the sea or the lakes near Lithuania to hook round and stuff. Loads of them.
So that surprises me, a story like that hasn't already been told. And all I'm not thinking a comedy, I'm thinking a straightforward depiction of true life events. So not like Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer type with linear changes and stuff like that.
Not like The Great Escape, sort of lighthearted.
No, I'd have it quite a serious film. But I think there's got to be an element of humour and of the people
who was it? Sorry, Vulcan Ulrich.
His name is Vaclav Ulik.
Vaclav Ulik. Yeah. Like having to be like a quite sound, well-rounded person to be like, you know what? I'm going to be the master of my own destiny. Mm. I'm not going to stay. I'm not going to put up with this. I'm going to break me and my family free from the restraints of the Russians and find freedom. So I think it's quite a straightforward film based on a true story that deserves to be heard. And a film like this one, I'd get a stalwart of directing, someone who knows what they're doing, someone that's been in the game for so long. And I think I'd have Ridley Scott. Nice. I think I'd have him directing because his last few films hit and miss. Mm. But we know the man can do it. Yeah. He's very good at telling a story. He's been around for decades. He's a master of his craft, all these right things. And in the casting, I don't think I would go with the sort of, it's a tricky route if you try and get actors that are Russian to put on Russian accents. So I'd go the Chernobyl TV
yes, it's
series.
Clever, yeah.
So they would be named with the Czech Republic name. Sorry, not Russian, yes, Czech Republic.
Yeah. It's wise because you don't want the Natasha and Boris.
Exactly.
Because it is a bit off.
You don't want to be watching American or Brits put on accents that take you away from the story. So I think they would speak in like their usual, not their usual accent.
Just their own voice.
Just sort of a broad English. I'm going for British actors for this one. So I see Ridley Scott directing this straight drama about, and the film's basically about breaking through, like you said, that Iron Curtain, but physically, not metaphorically breaking the chains, physically doing it. And starring in the role, I wouldn't have young and attractive, actors.
Can't.
I wouldn't have like stunning actors. I'd have middle-aged,
rough working lower-class people.
Exactly. And the only people I see in those roles are Stephen Graham and Olivia Colman.
Oh, nice.
And I don't think I'd have Stephen Graham he's a Scouser, so he's from Liverpool. I wouldn't have him as a Scouser because that would be quite...
You've made it harder for yourself.
That would be quite... It would take you out of the story. But we know he can do all sorts of accents, so he could just do a normal, generic British accent.
He doesn't have a Scouse accent in This Is England, I don't think. I'm trying to think.
No, he's great with accents.
He's good with accents.
Yeah, so I think just... Yeah. I don't know, he could have a London accent or just an old British accent, Olivia Colman, National Treasure, and I think she would be great.
So he's Vaclav, Olivia Colman be Marta.
Yeah.
And there's a 5 and 3 year old kid, but
they'll just be talented British kids.
Who know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
They do not have names. And I'd simply call the film Breakthrough.
From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent.
Well, my dear, we have two choices. We can stay here and live under tyranny, or we can get a fucking big tank and drive through that bastard Iron Curtain.
Can it be done, Vaclav?
I believe so.
Then we must try. For the children, Vaclav.
Go and get the kids and get some bread.
But we've run out of bread. Shall I go to the store?
Yes, go to the store. Get what we need. I'm going to liberate us.
Which store?
I don't mind. The closest store. Let's do this. Let's get out of here.
What bread do you like? Wholemeal or white?
What do you fancy?
Whatever doesn't make me constipate.
Repression constipates us all.
You're right. Maybe I should go with the white. That way I can void the tyranny from my nervous bowels.
Are you in a mood with me now?
No, but there's so much to think about, you know. Does the tank have aircon? Is there enough water in there? Where are we going to sleep?
Why are you focusing on the how and the when? Just focus on the why. Our family deserves freedom. That's all I'm looking for.
But I've got to go and get the bread. I've got to think about the children. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I am building a fucking tank to escape from fucking repression.
You're building it to escape from me. Stop pretending it's because of the communists.
Right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to the pub.
It's not a comedy, though.